Blog Talk Radio.
I'm talking about Motown Maurice right down here in the state of Florida.
And we've got Motown Maurice of the Motown Maurice Show.
I'm going to introduce you to Motown Maurice.
We have special, special, special guest, Motown Maurice.
Motown Maurice.
Speaking of crazy, we have Motown Maurice,
a man who is trying to put Tampa on the map for late night television.
He is not the next Arsenio Hall. He is the first Motown Maurice.
For those of you who haven't had a chance to experience Motown Maurice,
you have to understand he is very persistent.
And now he has transitioned
from Tampa to Los Angeles, California.
He's now in Los Angeles.
Continuing his pursuit of the quest of a late night talk show host.
Keep an eye on Motown.
Absolutely.
Keep an eye on that gentleman. One day this man is going to be the new face of late night.
Motown, we love you.
Motown Maurice, are you on the line?
And now, your host, Motown Maurice.
Thank you. Please be seated. Thank you. Does music make you lose control? Do you find yourself crying in animated movies and you can't explain why? Have you ever received a speeding ticket because your music made you drive faster? Or maybe you can't live without music. Or maybe you're trying to break into Hollywood as a TV and film composer. Well, this is the show for you, ladies and gentlemen. I got a very, very dynamic person on the line. He's so dynamic, I'm not even going to talk about myself in the beginning of this show. He's a multi-talented musician. For the last decade, his primary creative outlet has been composing original soundtracks for film and television, both in Hollywood. His work can be heard on a television series called Lego Ninjago Masters of Spinjitzu, debuted number one on the Cartoon Network. This guy is a great guy, very intelligent, knows what he's talking about. I actually met him at an independent film festival on April 17th of 2010, and I'm excited and elated to have him on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for Jay Vincent. Jay, are you on the line?
I'm on, Motown. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you so much.
Dude, it's a pleasure, man. Hey. I mean, you were a really great guy when I met you, and I'm always looking forward to talking to you. So I'm really glad we got to do this.
Yes. There's so much to talk about. You're a connoisseur. You know so much about music, and I want to address so many different things. Where to start from? I want to talk about the effects of music and how it can bring out such emotions in the movies. Like, you know, I'm going to come out and be open with you. Just recently, I've seen Lion King for the first time. And for the first time. I've seen a lot of animated movies, don't get me wrong, but somehow I skipped over Lion King. And as you know, they brought it back into theaters in 3D recently, and I went in there, and I was, you know, there was adults with kids, but I was probably, you know, I was by myself, and I was probably the only solo person in there, but there was moments I went to sniffling, you know, and I know it wasn't just because of the images. Yes, it was sad to see Mufasa plummet to his death, but at the same time, the music had an effect on me, and I've noticed a pattern with certain films, the way the score is delivered, and you do that type of stuff. So please explain to me what's going on.
Well, first off, I must make a confession as well. I, like you, am a full-grown man who does get the sniffles at The Lion King to this very day. Except I think I might have it a bit worse than you because I have that childhood anchor with it. It came out when I was, I think, probably 7-8 years old, and I was absolutely obsessed. I saw it 4 times in the theaters, and my first summer out here, I was just a 19-year-old kid, and I had an internship with Remote Control Productions, which is the company of Hans Zimmer, which is the biggest composer in the world now. Mm-hmm. And Hans was the one that did the music for The Lion King, and went on to win an Oscar for it. And I remember I would drive to work in Santa Monica every day, and I would listen to Lion King and get pumped up. And what would happen is I would get so pumped up that, like, my eyes would start tearing and I'd get a little red, so I'd have to stay in my car for a few extra minutes, compose myself, and then go into work. But you're absolutely right. I think to answer your question, what's going on is basically, I mean, like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and talk about what music does to you. Everybody knows it. You know, it's not really worth it explaining why, except that, you know, it comes at you the same way that spiritual things come to you. They come to you not, you know, for the most part, non-physically. You know, you can touch things with your hands, you can see things with your eyes, but music, you can't see it, you can't smell it, you can't touch it, but it completely takes a hold of you. I mean, it brings up this idea of, you know, what is reality, or what is God even. So it sort of brings you to that really, really primal place where you're confronted with, you know, the very nature of yourself. I'm really glad you brought up The Lion King too, because this is something that I've always, this really been close to my heart as a musician, is when you're dealing with The Lion King, you know, yes, you have beautiful melodies, you have beautiful, you know, orchestration, but also the biggest thing I think of when I think of The Lion King is African music. Mm. You know, the music of that land, of that place, of that culture. You know, obviously animals don't play instruments, but I mean, you know, most of the time. But, you know, you grow up thinking of these certain, you know, what would the African savannah sound like? What is, you know, like when, what's the very first thing you hear, the very first sound you hear on the first frame? You hear this guy just singing his heart out, and then your ears are perked up, you're on the edge of your seat, and it doesn't matter if you know the words. Actually, most of the time it's cooler if you don't know the words, because it's kind of like, hey, I don't care if you've taken language classes, I don't even care if you have your passport. I'm yanking you, and you're coming with me to this place. I don't care if you're ready. You're coming with me to this place right now. And you know, as you know, I grew up in Iowa, where everybody's pretty much WASPy, and everything's kind of the same. There's nothing wrong with that, but you know, you grow up just starved for a chance to travel to these different places. You're starved for these different cultural experiences, and so. Mm-hmm. You know, what I've always done is I've always been fascinated by different cultures and researching music of different lands. And if I think of my life, you know, the movies that have touched me the most are, you know, things in terms of music have been like The Lion King or The Last Temptation of Christ or Lord of the Rings. And all of these things have to do with taking you to this new place and just soaking you right into it. So the more sounds that you can come up with that are authentic to that particular time and place, it just you know, succeeds much better at placing you as an audience member right there, so you can experience it, you know, firsthand.
Now, to be a composer of this magnitude, and I know you, as a matter of fact, you love diversity. So your love for diversity, it actually allows you to travel, doesn't it? You travel to different places. I know you've been to the islands of Japan, the Vatican. I think you even sang for Pope Benedict on his 80th birthday. Is that
true? That's right. Well, actually, I must be honest. All of those things that you previously mentioned were as a singer. I do quite. I mean, as a composer, you know, you love all different kinds of music. You all love all different outlets of music. So most people like me, you'll meet, play several different instruments, and they have pretty decent voices. Just because if you live and breathe music, then you're going to want to play something. If you see a piano in a room, you're going to want to play it. Mm-hmm. If you hear a song on the radio, it's not just good enough that you like it. You have to be able to sing it too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's this whole like we're hands on, you know, type of breed.
Yeah.
So all of those things, you know, the Japan thing, the Vatican thing, that was, I think, Pope Benedict turned 80, I think, in 2007. And we did a tour in Europe, all over Northern Italy and Austria and Czech Republic. And this was all just singing tours. I've been, you know, classically singing for most of my life. So, you know, music of all kinds provides great opportunities because, you know, you have different people, you know, from other lands coming here, and you don't really think of people from America going on tour, but it happens all the time. Like the world, you know, despite what most people think, you know, the world thinks of us, so like a lot of people are still very open to American culture and to love having that shared as kind of, you know, from an ambassador standpoint. So, you know, I'm going to Japan in 2 weeks and with this professional singing group, and we're singing a bunch of Stephen Foster, you know, American folk songs, and you know, there are a lot of Japanese audiences who love it. Same thing, you know, obviously, you know as well as I do, whenever somebody from, you know, Europe or South America or Africa comes here, you know, we all India, they, you know, we all want to come and hear what they have to say, because it's this new foreign exotic thing with us. I just saw Baba Mal, Senegalese singer, guitarist, songwriter, absolutely unbelievable. He sang on the Last Temptation of Christ soundtrack as well. And he performed at USC about 3 weeks ago, and I was just in heaven. So, music, if we're talking, you know, music and culture, I can only think of one other thing, and that's food, that makes people more open to experiencing, you know, different cultures. You know, I always have this joke that everybody's dad likes Mexican food. You ever heard that?
No, I haven't.
I mean, maybe it's just me or the way that I grew up, but like everybody I know, like their dad loves Mexican food, and it doesn't matter if they never leave their house or if they've never been to Mexico or if they've never met a Mexican person. It doesn't matter. They all love Mexican food. especially conservative white men all love Mexican food. I don't know what it is. It's a natural phenomenon, but yeah, it's like, you know, people can be totally ignorant or like on the, you know, worst end of the spectrum. They can actually be a little, you know, shall we say, racist or bigoted or just I guess culturally uninitiated with a lot of stuff. But that doesn't stop them from loving the food, and it doesn't stop them from loving a lot of the music.
If we're talking about
true globalization, not in terms of business, but in terms of, you know, mutual respect for different cultures and where we come from, you know, food and music are at the front lines of this integration.
Yes, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Motown Maurice, and I got Hollywood film and television music composer Jay Vincent on the line. Jay, it's about time we get right into your work. You done took us around the world and back. So I want to talk about some of your work that you've allowed me to play on the show. The first one is called The Age of Dragons. Can you set that up for me, please?
Absolutely. So I do a lot of different kinds of work. One is I do music for trailers and previews, and not just for film and TV, but also for video games. So Dragon Age 2 is a big you know, medieval style role playing fantasy franchise, kind of in the vein of Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones, and it's a big video game. And anyway, I've done a lot of trailers for EA. This was actually the very first trailer I did for the EA franchise, and I went around the world. It did very well, and EA was gracious enough to add this track to the soundtrack album of the game, even though I had nothing to do with the game itself. And so you can get it on iTunes, Amazon, CD Baby, any place. But I was very, very, very grateful that EA was kind enough to, you know, add this to the bunch. So this is from basically just encompassing the entire story of the hero named Hawk in Dragon Age 2. So you have mysticism, you have adventure, you have love, and just dipping back into the eternal mystery that is Dragon Age 2.
Ladies and gentlemen, the world premiere on Motown Maurice's Hustle and Shuffle, The Dragon Age, The Age of Dragons by Jay Vincent. Brace yourself. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back on the line. That was the Age of Dragons. I'm loving that.
Thank you very much, my friend.
Hey, did you said that was inspired a little bit by the Lord of the Rings?
A little bit. I mean, it's all part of that fantasy world where you know, where good and evil still reign true. You know, it's honestly, I'm not, don't shoot me, but I've really never played the video game, so I have no idea whether or not the dragons are good or the dragons are bad. But needless to say, they're a force to be reckoned with, so that means big brass and big choirs. And I just love, you know, Lord of the Rings was a huge influence on my life, and just in the way that, like the classical composer Richard Wagner and, you know, more notably today, John Williams, the way that they use theme and melody to tell the story, not just to provide provide mood and character, but also to provide actual information in the story. It's like a psychological masterpiece. Yeah. So I've been listening to that fantasy style music for ages and ages, and you barely get to do it anymore because that genre, it's a big budget thing. You know, it's not... You know, and you know, I'm sure you know this because you speak to a lot of people in the independent film world. There's not a lot of fantasy going on, is there?
Just because
there's not the money for it. It's like, you know, it costs a lot to make you think you're somewhere else.
Wow. But I like that. I mean, as I was listening to it, I felt like Saving the Shire and Defeating Sauron. I'm serious. I felt like
awesome,
that.
Awesome. You know your Lord of the Rings terms. Very, very good.
Oh, yeah. I love Lord of the Rings. I can relate so much to heroic movies, quest movies, because I'm on my own quest and I just feel that relation. So I do love the Lord of the Rings.
Absolutely. Well, just like Lord of the Rings, it really helps to have a lot of good people behind you when you're on your quest.
Oh, man. Oh, yes, exactly. And it is beautiful, you know, just to mention, I see so many of the similarities. Like, you have people that fellowship with you. Sometimes they depart, but then they come back. You know, it's a wonderful thing. I love that. I mean, that can even work with video games like The Legend of Zelda and things like that. You know, I love all those.
Oh, bringing out the classics.
Yes. Are you a fan of The Legend of Zelda also?
Oh, man. Don't even get me started.
So, wait, let me ask you this. So, when you play video games, I'm assuming.
Honestly, I mean, I dabbled when I was a kid, but I think it more had to do with it was this forbidden fruit because my mom was one of those good moms, and she was a teacher, and she never let me play video games. So, whenever I went to friends' houses, it was like, oh, video games. So, I mean, to be totally honest, once I grew up and, you know, was able to afford my own game system, I was just way too into music. I just kind of stopped paying attention.
Oh, man, I feel you. Well, I know video games is big. It's getting bigger and bigger. It makes more money than Hollywood, than the film industry. So I know they pay very close attention and detail to the scores and those type of things. There's this one video game that I love, and I'm anxious to play the final part of the series. It's Gears of War, and in Gears of War 2, there's this scene where Dominic has been looking for his wife for so long, and then he finally finds her, and he's like, "Baby, let's go," but it's an illusion. They later reveal to you that she is messed up, zombified, and the music and the images just messes you up. And then everybody that I know that scene, like, went to tears because they felt for Dominic. You know, the music and the images and the story has such a compelling way of just making you feel for the characters. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. Absolutely right. Yeah, like I said, it just puts you in that first-person front lines position of experiencing that moment as if it were happening to you. And I just want to say real briefly that I absolutely love what's going on with video games right now, even though as a player I'm not too much part of the world just because this thing that I'm doing with, you know, composing takes up most of my time. But my best friend, he's an amazing, amazing Indian-American director named Neil Upadhyay. If you want to check out, it's Neil, N-E-E-L, Real, R-E-E-L, .com. I believe is his site. He's a fantastic director if you can afford him. But he is a trailer director, writer, director, editor for EA Games. So he and I collaborate a lot on all the Dragon Age things and everything. And And he's just telling me all these amazing stories about how video games are getting so, you know, they're no longer entertainment. They're drama.
Yeah.
They're emotion and their story. And that's why, you know, that's why a lot of, you know, actors are acting in video game cinematics. And, you know, the whole term video game cinematics didn't even exist like 10 or 15 years ago. But, you know, but people are, you know, it's no longer just a form of entertainment. It's actually a way to get engrossed in a story and, like you said, feel those emotions, except it's much more interactive. And so, I mean, I have no idea where this whole thing is gonna be taken. But, I mean, I must admit, even I was, you know, a little prejudiced against the whole video game world. But, I mean, I have to just totally humble myself. You know, I don't know if I could do it publicly. You know, I'm publicly humbling myself and saying that, you know, it is irrefutable and it is undeniable that video games can be considered an art.
Yep. We're gonna have a video game party and I'm gonna introduce you to some games, right? And then
that sounds good.
And then one thing's gonna lead to another, you're gonna call your mom and say, "Hey mom, remember when I couldn't play video games? Well now I'm writing music for video games. Look at me now. Not only am I playing them, I'm writing the score for them."
Hey, man.
So much fun. I wanna play this next track, Ninjago Overture. Tell me about that.
Well, if any of you have kids or little nieces and nephews, they're probably obsessed with these things called Ninjago toys or Lego Ninjas. It's the newest, it's an original franchise from the Lego company, and now they've created a whole Pixar-style 3D animated television series out of it. It's absolutely so much fun. It did really well. It debuted at number one for its demographic on Cartoon Network, and now we're greenlit for a whole two seasons. So look out on Cartoon Network in January 2012, and you'll be able to watch the show once a week. So anyway, it's just about four ninjas and four magical weapons, and they have their sensei, and it's kind of bringing back the whole ninja craze from, you know, 20 years ago when we were kids, you know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically just, you know, four young men who are young Lego men who are coming into their own, and they're a little cocky, but they have, you know, pure hearts, and they listen to their sensei, and they get in a little trouble, and then they say, "Oh, our sensei was right." But they get into all sorts of situations, and, you know, as they develop and as their heroism kind of comes to the forefront, you know, as a composer, you're able to play around with more and more and more heroic elements and more dramatic elements as the show goes forward. But it's really just musically, it's a trip around the world. You get to do music from Japan, from India, from Eastern Europe, from South America, from you know, ancient worlds never discovered. It's absolutely great. So this is just the main theme to Lego Ninjago.
Ladies and gentlemen, prepare yourself. The main theme of Lego Ninjago. All right. Now, Jay, I gotta ask you a question. Is it normal that I feel like a Lego Ninja Warrior myself right now. I mean, as I was listening to that, I mean, I got my karate chops in the air, my kung fu fighting foot is shaking. I mean, it's got that effect on me.
And was your body reduced to having only 4 or 5 joints?
I think so. Something happened.
Oh man, yeah, yeah. Like I said, it's you know, if I haven't put the person right there on the front lines of experiencing the story, not mm-hmm. just as a viewer, but for themselves as if it were them, then I haven't really done my job.
Wow.
So you know, and you know, kind of like the Lion King, you know, and that's kind of why I just keep on singing as much as I do, is that the human voice, just because there's no pretense, there's no instrument, sometimes there is even no training necessary, just the human voice is able to conjure up such primal emotions and such, you know, just ancient history of, like, you know, human beings themselves, that there's nothing else like it. That's why The Lion King has such a profound effect on people. That's why in that whole thing, my writing partner Mike Kramer and I, we get in the studio and we do those little samurai yells, and it really does make a big difference. I don't know if you've seen the movie The Last Samurai, but they use quite a bit of, you know, they use a choir of men mm-hmm. just yelling war cries, and they have that in the soundtrack.
No.
And it really just makes, I mean, it's like night and day. It makes a huge, huge difference to have voices. Unfortunately, you know, that, again, that doesn't happen very often in independent films because singers are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big problem. There's the whole thing with budgets, and maybe we can talk about that some other time. But, but in the spirit of keeping things positive, I mean, you know, there's always ways around it. There's always creative ways to cut budgets. And, you know, the more people you're friends with in this town, the more people like you, the more people will do favors for you. And, you know, the more people will sort of say, hey, you know, let's just sort of do this off book, or let's just, you know, my rate normally would be X amount, but I'm going to give you lower just because I really believe in this whole thing.
Yes. Well, yo, Jay, this has been fascinating. You're a connoisseur. You know exactly what you're talking about. I see possibly in the future you teaching, you know, classes at USC, you know, because you just love it. And if I'm not mistaken, you are under the teachings of Mozart one way or another, correct?
Oh, yeah. Well, a long, long sort of chain of command, kind of like the traditions in the East, the whole student to, you know, the guru to student relationship. I mean, that definitely applies in the West when it comes to the arts. You know, composers study with each other one on one.
Yeah,
you know,
but
what's up?
Oh, I sincerely apologize. We're running out of time. So I definitely want you to plug your information so any aspiring composer, music producer can contact you, you know, or just reach out and show you some love.
Not a problem. I appreciate that. Well, my website, where you can find a lot of information, including all the latest music and cues from films and trailers and links to other talented filmmakers that I'm involved with, because like we said, it's all about the fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
My website is just www.jvincentmusic.com. And I have a YouTube channel. My company name is Seven Wheel Sound. Seven wheels for seven chakras. It's about getting, you know, firing on all cylinders, getting music for your spirit, music for your guts, music for your heart, music for your mind, everything. And that's the standard that I ascribe to, you know, with anybody that I work with, anybody that works with me or anybody who works for me or whatever. So the YouTube channel is just youtube.com/sevenwheelsound.
Nice. Well, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you reach out to Jay. Now, before you go, I do got one question I have to ask you. Can you handle this?
Shoot.
Who is the future of late night television?
Is that even a question? It's obvious. Mr. Motown Maurice is the future.
That's
of
what
late
I'm
night
talking about. Jay, hey, this has really been a sincere pleasure having you on the show. You know I'm calling you back for another show, and we're going to give them some more, because I couldn't cover everything in this show. I just couldn't, you know. So I'm definitely going to have you back, and we're going to get down to some of the origins and more of these explanations on how music affects the mind, body, and soul, and definitely touch on score some more. So thank you again. Until next time, my brother. Thank you.
The pleasure's all mine, man. Can't wait.
No doubt. Thank you. Take care. That was Jay Vincent. That was some good stuff. That was a good show. Definitely a good show. Very informative. Very informative. He knows what he's talking about. I hope all the aspiring composers out there are listening to this show, because he's got all the information, he's got the knowledge, and he shared it all in this one broadcast. So this is Motown Maurice. I'm returning Monday with a lineup of shows. I'm hitting it up with my Hustle and Shuffle, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, breaking on the weekends. But you can call me because I'm accepting guests for the show. This is Motown Maurice. Check me out on my quest, the quest of a late-night talk show host, at www.MotownMaurice.com. That's MotownMaurice.com. Until next time, be blessed. Take care. Peace and blessings.